and welcome to the Twickenham CC podcast. My name is Dan Huff. I am secretary of the club. Very pleased to welcome one of our resident commentators, Eugene Berger. Hi, Eugene.
Evening, Dan. How are you doing?
I'm good. You?
Yeah, very well. Thank you.
Fantastic. And we have a special guest this week. Really pleased to be able to say hi to our fifth team skipper, Chris Wilde. How are you, Chris?
Dan, how
battling
are you?
Battling on. Enjoying the thought of a cricket-filled weekend after a week full of rain, of course, because it's been pretty average, hasn't it, guys, in terms of the weather of late?
Yeah, let's go with average. I think it's the correct weather for ducks, as they say. That's about
it. Yeah, absolutely. Having seen the square earlier today at the Green, yeah, it definitely was. Ducks, swans and water polo that was on the agenda rather than cricket. But be that as it may, lots for us to get through tonight. First up, fellas.
I do think we've been quite lucky with the weather, though, Dan. I mean, it's been horrible during the week, but Saturday, touch wood, has been good every week. So
I think that's a fair comment. And I certainly know of friends of mine who play cricket around the country who've not been so lucky, who've missed a couple of games already this year. So perhaps we are due a wet one, but actually the weather's picking up for the weekend. So if we can have 24 hours worth of dryness, then you never know, we may still get some cricket in. Folks, I wanted to start off with something else, though. You may well have been aware that a former TCC member has been very much in the news this week. Jay Plaha played for the Tees last year, for the Twos, for the Threes. Played a bit on Sundays as well. Always keen as mustard. And he was bowling on Saturday at David Warner, obviously the Australian opening batsman, at the Oval as they were practising. And poor old Jay bowled Warner what I guess must have been something akin to a long hop, and the ball came rocketing back at him and smashed him in the face. And he was not at all in the best of health. Went to hospital. Took him a couple of days to recover. And I think he's now up and on his feet and moving. But just a quick shout out to Jay to say, you know, I hope you're on the mend, Gov. And also, I know a couple of Tees guys have been in to see him. Dom Thamby, there was photographic evidence of Dom being with him earlier in the week. So, Jay, if you're listening, sort of chin up. And I hope you're out and about and playing cricket sometime soon. With that in mind, I was going to just ask you guys, any... you know, injuries are part and parcel of all sports and indeed of life, quite frankly. Any sort of odd injury experiences that you've had or that others in your vicinity have had, whether it's be cricket or indeed other sport related? Huge, anything to offer there?
Nothing that offers a bit of humour, Dan. I've only had two fairly serious ones that have happened. Obviously, the one that happened, 2 weeks ago with us when somebody got hit in the yep. face quite badly. And, you know, maybe 2 years ago, one of the guys on the Green dove for a catch and knocked himself unconscious. So, yeah, not ones that I'd like to mention again and that have some humour. But, what about you, Dan?
Well, I've had a couple. Yeah, I mean, I remember, you know, Twickenham CC legend Clint McCabe doing himself a very serious injury in a pre-season friendly, I think it was. And he basically went for a catch and caught it and got up and said, oh, something feels wrong here. And it was in a sort of, I think it was his kidney, I think. It was certainly the sort of place you don't get cricket in injuries. You know, you hurt your elbows, you hurt your knees, you hurt your joints. And he said, I'm not feeling so good here. And we all said, you know, man up, Clint, you're fine. And so Clint was chucked the ball, bowled the next over, and bowled pretty well. I think it was a maiden, actually. And then said, the guys, this really isn't right. I'm not feeling so good. I'm just going to go off and have a sit down. And Clint ended up that night, and I ended up taking him to hospital, and he didn't come out of hospital for the best part of a month. The guy was on sort of life support for a bit of it. His dad came over all the way from South Africa, and ultimately Clint was in a really bad way. But the reason I mention it is not because he was in a bad way. He's obviously recovered and he's fine now. It's the fact he still managed to bowl another maiden. And I think given that the seriousness of the injury, you know, respect due to Clint for putting an M in the scorebook under those circumstances.
Yeah. Well, that's what I love, the skipper, Dan.
Absolutely.
Commitment to the team.
How about you, Chris? Is there anything that you've come across, or is that not something that...
Nothing particularly humorous. I mean, as an opening batsman, I've worn more than my fair share, as all openers have. As an opening batsman, again, I've seen one from the other end. I saw my poor opening... fellow opening batsman take one to the face, and the ball actually managed to work its way somehow in between the visor and the grill of the helmet and gave him a black eye. He did that on them, to be fair to him. He did that on.
I'm not sure the health and safety guys would be massively impressed with that these days, but perhaps from an incident from a different time in a different place, I guess. I've got one other I can throw into the mix, actually, and that's from many years ago, about 25 years ago now, and I was in Shropshire. A good friend of mine called Shane Gwilt was went for a catch, and he was going backwards, and he was sort of hurtling towards the boundary at the same time, and he sort of got it all wrong and ended up falling in a bit of a heap, but he put his arms behind him, as you often sort of do when you're falling back trying to take a catch, and ended up breaking both of his arms. And it was one of those odd incidents where no one really knew if it was serious or not. And Shane got up and he tried to throw the ball back in. And, you know, he picked it up and then sort of suddenly realised, this is not working, and tried to throw it in. It went about 5 yards. And then, of course, he ended up in a crumpled heap again. So poor old Shane went off to hospital. About 3 hours later, he came back and we were batting, and his dad, who'd taken him to hospital, had sort of driven up into the car park, and Shane was had his seatbelt on, and he had both of his arms sort of in plaster, and his dad just wandered off and left him in the car, and of course he couldn't get out of the car, so he was stuck there, and you could see, we could see him from the pavilion yelling, "Oi, Dad, oi, come back here, get me out of the car." And of course Derek, his dad, walked all the way to the pavilion, didn't have any idea what was going on, and maybe you had to be there, but it was a humorous moment. And and of course his arms recovered, and he's since played an awful lot of cricket since then, but that's one I won't forget.
Poor chap couldn't even have a pint during that injury.
Straws were used. Yeah, so he had his pint. I think from memory, Shane wasn't the type of guy who'd miss out on a pint. You know, so he had a, he kept going there. But yeah, that was another odd one that I remember. Anyway, enough of injuries, folks. There's plenty more things that we could talk about. Cricket World Cup. Now, things have been a bit slower, of course, than they have been in previous weeks, because we've had plenty of rain. And that's not without controversy, of course. There have been a few people moaning and groaning about that. One idea that came up was to have 2 days per game. So basically to have a day that you could fall back on should the first day be rained off. You were victim of one of these games, if I remember rightly. Did you go and see any, you went to see some cricket this week?
I did try to, yeah. So we went to go and watch the West Indies versus South Africa game, attempted to. And there was, as everybody will know, 7.2. I don't know, one or two balls bowled. However, we only saw four of them. Due to somebody arriving very late, unfortunately, at the meet.
So
Hine Dasani arrived half an hour late from the meet time, which meant that we were half an hour, which is good because, you know, I think seven overs is roughly half an hour. So, yeah, as we got into the ground, we sat down, watched four balls, the rain came down, and that was the end of it.
So, can you talk me through the four balls, Hugh?
Yeah, they were four short balls with Faf du Plessis leaving all four of them.
Oh, brilliant. What a great four balls to see.
I know. I would have preferred to see maybe some of the wickets, because I know Hatch went out and Markram, I think he got strangled down the leg side, according to TV replays. But yeah, it was an enjoyable day still. Obviously going out there with Holger and Paul and Hine was good company at least.
Super. And you I presume get some money back, right? Don't tell me that's going to cost you whatever, what, 50 quid maybe?
I have to say the one good thing that they've done is that if it's less than 15 overs, you get 100% of your match fee back, excluding any transactional charges. And right. If it's between 15 and 30 overs, you get 50% back. So yeah, we're fortunate in that, the only thing we lost was, I suppose, the travel money, which was there, which is, you know, it's not too much of a hassle. But on a positive note, South Africa got their first point of the World Cup.
You're in the game.
We're off the bottom of the log, which is good.
Magnificent. And the point, so if they'd have replayed the day after, what would you have gone?
Yeah.
Or I guess, yeah, you would have gone. Yeah. What's your feeling about that? Should we try and think about those things or not?
I tell you what, anyone you talk to at the moment, this seems to be a big talking point. And I think the reason behind it is because of the amount of games that we've lost. You know, I personally would happily go and, go down on the Tuesday. I know the match was on the Monday. Would happily go down on the Tuesday and watch the game on the Tuesday. I understand that not everybody can, but I'm pretty sure that if you had to give fans the option of watching on a, you know, reserve day, I think they would. It's a good talking point. It's something that I think, you know, something needs to be thought about. You know, the other
Chris, option... Chris, what's your take on this?
I'm sympathetic to that, but the flip side of the argument is that, I mean, it's an incredibly long competition already. Surely if you were to sort of in effect double the opening stage in terms of potential dates play, then that's going to make a long competition even longer already.
Well, is it really though? Because you're still playing the same amount of games. I get the theory that, you know, if the game's rained off, you know, after 50 overs or whatever the case might be, that might be a different scenario, but I don't think we've really had that. I think, you know, maybe if they thought about it and said, well, look, I think two or three of the games have been rained off without a ball being bowled, without the toss being had. Those are the sort of days and games that I would say maybe that deserve the replay and the opportunity. Saying that, you know, I don't think we would have been able to play any cricket this week on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday or Thursday. So, you know, there's a couple of school of thoughts there.
Mm. I mean, I think there's two things that occur to me on that one. The first thing is if you needed a reserve day, then you'd have to plan it for every game in the tournament. You'd have to plan it at least.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have to use it necessarily, but you'd have to plan it.
That
would mean, I think, that logistically the tournament would go from already being 6 weeks to, I mean, arguably 8 or 9 weeks, no?
Well, if they're playing in the same grounds, you know, you could argue. I mean, South Africa had, what, three games in 7 days.
Mm.
You know, if they didn't play against, I don't know, one of the, you know, if they didn't play against the West Indies, they could have played on the Tuesday, which meant they would have had, you know, a little bit more of a shorter break, if we can call it that.
But I don't think it's about the players, Yuge. I think the players, it's neither here nor there. I mean, crikey, they play Test match cricket, that's 5 days on the bank.
Yeah.
You know, I've got no real issue with them having to do it. It's more, I mean, I think I read somewhere that to have one, it's the 16,000 people involved in organising a game of cricket for one day in one of these World Cup matches, ranging from the guys who are there for security through to the people who are selling you the tickets, who are flogging the burgers, who are doing all of the admin that no one ever sees. And that has to be replicated every time. And that gets more expensive.
Yeah.
And even if it's not used, I'm guessing you'd have to pay security staff, I guess, a retainer, just in case you need them on the second day, no?
Yeah, it makes sense. And maybe some of the stuff can be reused at other games. You know, hypothetically, that burger van that's, I don't know,
in one
of the grounds maybe moves to one of the other grounds, you know, a day later. I don't know the logistics of it, but
yeah,
I'm just looking at it from a fan point of view, obviously, and not from an organiser's. I'm sure there's challenges.
From a fan's perspective, you know, more cricket the better, quite frankly. You should play 365 days a year, but from my perspective. But I mean, I think it was your former wicketkeeper, Richardson, who's head of the ICC now, said that the logistical challenges of doing it are way more complicated than the average fan would realise. And I don't, you know, I guess he's probably got a point there, but I don't really know what the point is, if you know what I mean. I don't know how exactly that all stacks up. But I mean, travelling between grounds, I assume we'll just get in the bus. But, I can guess why hotel arrangements and stuff will get further complicated, which all sounds really boring, but I can imagine that if you're organising a World Cup, it can be quite significant as well. In terms of the length of the tournament, though, you wouldn't have an issue with it being 8 weeks, 9 weeks long. That wouldn't worry you.
No, I mean, it is that long now, isn't it? I can't remember. I don't remember off the top of my head. But
yeah, it might be.
I think it is that long because of the new format in that, you know, every team plays every team. So personally, yeah. I you know, I just like to watch more cricket. But, you know, then again, I didn't think the BBL was too long, and I don't think the IPL is too long. So that's just me liking to watch cricket.
Yeah, and I think we have been quite unlucky this time as well. I mean, I can't remember the stats off the top of my head, but it's clearly been the most rain-affected World Cup ever. And it could carry on. Of course, one thing that occurs to me, and I said this in the last podcast, is it could be very difficult for India, because India, you know, managed to persuade the ICC to allow them to arrive late. And they're the ones with the most games stacking up, and they could, in theory, be the ones who suffer the most because of this. Although, I did also work out today, sad man that I am, if they have every game rained off from now on in, they'll have won two and had seven rained off. And that's equivalent to winning five, losing three, and having one rained off points-wise. So it'd be 11 points.
That's unbelievable, Matt. Well done, Dan.
Cheers, mate. But, you know, sad man that I am. But my basic point is, if you did happen to play these games and won five, lost three, and drew one, were you three?
Yeah, exactly.
You qualify. So I'm afraid even my, you know, my willingness for this to go back and bite India on the bum, it won't work like that. I think they're still going through.
Yeah.
Did either of you watch the one exciting game we have had this week, where Pakistan were involved against Australia? Did you see much of that?
I didn't know. I don't know about you, Chris.
No, I subversively saw a little bit of it. A great game of cricket. I mean, Pakistan, who knows? We've got no idea who's going to turn up. And they very nearly pulled off a monstrous shock. And then, of course, obviously sort of threw it away a bit. Although saying that, Mitchell Starc's looking good, guys. He's a handful. Yeah. And I think any side who wants to win this World Cup is going to have to deal with him. And he's looking like he's the real deal.
Is it just Mitchell Starc, or is it the bowlers fighting back then?
Well, I was going to throw that one up to you. I don't know. Well, you've got some theories on this, haven't you?
Yeah, for me personally, just having a look and maybe reading a little bit of the media. Again, everything you read on the internet must be true. Looking at how many wickets
all the time.
looking at the amount of wickets that have been taken by the quicks and where and how they've taken them, it looks like the short ball's back. I read something the other day saying that, of the amount of short balls that have been bowled in this World Cup, it's roughly something to the effect of 42%, which is 10% higher than, on average throughout the year. And when you look at the amount of wickets that have been taken, and you obviously think about the games that have been played in the past couple of weeks, how many people have been caught, hooking a ball? And it does make me think, maybe the bowlers have now realised, instead of serving it up on a half volley and trying to bowl these Yorkers, maybe the half trackers are the way to go, especially when you're bowling at, 85, 90, 95 clicks. So, yeah, it's good to see that the fast bowlers are coming back. I'd love to see the math behind how many wickets have been taken by the quicks versus the spinners, and then sort of do a little bit of an analysis on that. But clearly, our badger, Mr. Cavilla's not on tonight, so he'd have an opinion.
We will get him on the case. This is a mission for Cavilla. I think there's two types of bouncer as well in there, isn't there? I mean, the West Indies have sort of reinvented themselves as the West Indies of old. They're going for quicker bouncers. But the slow ball bouncer has been in bowler's armoury for a while, hasn't it? And that's, I haven't seen so many of those this time round. Maybe others have, but have you seen much of those, Chris? Is this slow ball bouncer out of fashion? It's all quick, quick, quick now? Or
I've only really seen a lot of the quick stuff. I saw Australia pepper West Indies with a lot of the short stuff, and it was really keeping West Indies under the cosh. So you have to be careful, though. They seem to just get called wide or no ball quite regularly. So it's a fine line for the bowler to serve up a proper bouncer that isn't going to be called wide and isn't just going to be meat and drink for a batsman.
It's got to be a throat ball, hasn't it? It can't be higher, because otherwise it's a wide, and it can't be lower because they'll just pull you for four. So I guess you've got to go throat.
Yeah. The other thing which I just thought about is the dimensions of the grounds in England. The straight boundaries are relatively short, thinking about them. And, going to square leg and point, they're very, very long. So maybe it's a tactic that they're just using specific to this World Cup. Again, another theory that we can.
Yeah, some grounds are odd shapes as well, aren't they? And depending on where wickets are, you can have very short boundaries in odd parts of the ground. And given the way the modern game's developing, people just see the short boundary and find a way of getting the ball there. I see that with a few of our guys at Twickenham. Ajmal Alabad, when I see him bat, he thinks about the game completely differently to the way I do. He looks for a gap and then he's going to hit it there. Whereas, of course, I will look to just try and play the ball in the V, or will look to play certain shots in certain ways that I've been taught. Whereas he will see the gap and he'll find a way of getting the ball there. And I take my hat off to these guys. They've got fast hands. They've got wrists that go really quickly. They all look like hockey players to me. That they can play reverse sweeps as well as normal sweeps, and the game's moved on really quickly. And I think short boundaries, that they're so much more useful for batters now than they were in the past.
Yeah, it's definitely evolved.
Cool. Well, this time next week when we chat, I'm sure we'll have more cricket related, World Cup related material, because there are quite a few games over the weekend. The forecast is picking up.
We hope.
There's the minor affair of India v Pakistan on Sunday. I'm sure that will be a calm, tranquil effort all round. So I'm looking forward to that one. I'm actually going to be in Manchester myself at the weekend, where the game is. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that one pans out on and off the field. Before we get on to more Twickenham CC stuff, we have had some feedback, guys, on the podcast last week. And it was, Chris, about your team. Okay. In the last podcast, I mentioned that your week four game had a considerable number of wides. Okay, and this is obviously because the leg side interpretation perhaps is somewhat narrow. But one of our former players, Al Storey, who neither of you will know, he emigrated to Canada about probably 7 or 8 years ago now. But in the early 2000s, mid 2000s, Al was an absolute stalwart at the club, played Saturdays, Sundays in the ones, captained the twos for a bit. Him and Vokesy did it together, I remember that. And he's now playing cricket in Canada. And his club side earlier this season had a game where there was 111 wides.
Dearie me.
Exactly what I thought. Nelson strikes, and 80 of them were against Al's team, and 31 were by Al's team. So 80 in one innings. That strikes me as pretty damn impressive. One other thing from the scorecard, because Al did tell me this, that they had a bowler who managed to take, I think it was 3 for 5 off 4 balls, or 5 balls, it had to be 5 balls, then got injured, and that was his spell. And I thought, that's a spell and half, that. 3 for 5 off 5 balls, then you get injured.
It sounds like a tactical injury to me, though, to protect his figure.
You know what, Al, you need to come back at us. Talk to us about this injury. Was it kosher? What sort of injury was it? We need to know more. But I thought, as feedback goes, that was brilliant. And can anyone else, can any other listener beat 111 wides in a game? Because if you can, we need to hear about it.
I thought last week's game was going to be a record. How many were there in total? 60 or 70 wides between both teams. It was outrageous.
Yeah. Well, we'll get onto that in a minute. But Chris, great that you're here, of course, and great that we've got the 15 skipper talking about the challenges and the experiences you've had. But as a bit of background, of course, 5 games this year, you were being very consistent up until this week. And this week, the consistency was blown apart because you won. And you won well. You won well as well, didn't you? Talk us through it.
We won by 10 wickets, Dan. I don't think you can win better, can you?
Absolutely. Yeah, scores were? What were the scores?
So we bowled them out for 69, and we done them over in 10 overs.
And if I'm right in saying, because I popped down to watch for a little bit, and the fact that there was obviously women's beach volleyball on next door had nothing whatsoever to do with me choosing to come and watch your game. But the beach volleyball was very good, I have to say. But they were struggling at worse than that. It was 30-odd for 7 at one stage, is that right?
I think so. It all happened so fast, to be honest with you. Wickets kept tumbling. And one guy, you're right, who came in at the end and probably did the right thing. He just chanced his arm and had a swing rather than trying to scratch around. Managed to connect with a few, got a few fours, pushed their score up a little bit, but they just kept leaking wickets. My guys played so well. We held our catches. We bowled in the right spots. We fielded like demons. And we did the business. Yeah.
I mean, who took the wickets?
Harmy took a fiver and Anil took a fiver. So I actually had very little captaincy to do in terms of changing the bowling. These guys just kept taking wickets and I kept them on. The only bit of captaincy really was opening with a spin bowler, taking a little bit of inspiration from the World Cup there, trying to mix it up, do something a bit different, especially with the overnight rain that we had. It was a good toss to win. It was a difficult...
Oh, don't get on tosses. We're going to get onto this later, Chris. Don't talk to Eugene about tosses, all right? He didn't have such a positive experience at the weekend. We'll get onto that in a minute. I thought the Harminator bowled really well, I have to say. He's got a lovely loop, and I thought he was good value for those 5 wickets. Whereas Anil, he comes in off a fair old run, doesn't he? And he looked like he was on the money too.
Yeah, left arm over, swings it both ways, on the money. He's always going to take wickets, especially at my level. When you take wickets at any level, when you swing it both ways. Harmy has the meanest googly on him that I have ever seen. It's so well hidden. I asked him, how do you do it? He said, I don't know when it's going to be a googly. That's how well hidden it is.
You want to stop talking these players up, mate. You'll never see him again. Dasani listens to you.
Yeah.
But they did both bowl very well. And I thought the vibe in the field was excellent. I'm not one for people talking all the time just for the sake of it. It's just rattle then. But I could tell that everyone was really, you know, focused on the job in hand. It sounded like a good field in, you know, a good field to be fielding in, if you follow me.
Yeah, I do. And thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's a great team to play for. We're all out there for each other. And I think the whole team has been feeling the frustration from losing the first 4 on the bounce. Because as you said in your introduction, we were in with the chance with every single game. I mean, we scored regularly, scoring over 200 or thereabouts. Every game we took 8 or 9 wickets and just couldn't knock over the last couple. So I think the whole team's been sharing the frustration, and we really, really wanted a win for ourselves, for each other, for the club. And it all just came together beautifully.
Well, we said at the end of the last podcast, Chris, that just looking at it from afar, that the feeling was someone somewhere is going to get it, because you've been really close.
Yeah.
And we went on record as saying, when it comes, this win's going to be a really big one. And sure enough, it was. Talk to us about the team then. You've had a fair bit of consistency this year, right? You've had mostly the same guys.
It's something I've worked quite hard on, having played for the Fives for sort of two bits of seasons, if you like. There was always massive rotation for, you know, no one's real fault. That's the nature of 15 cricket, etc. But yeah, there was a lot of sort of churn, and there wasn't really much of a core, if any kind of a core at all. But this season, it's been really good. Availability has been great. Can't fault my guys for that at all. They've been turning out for me week after week. And I've got a good core of 7 or 8 guys that are turning out for me week in, week out. And it does create an appropriate esprit de corps over time. So,
esprit de corps, what more could you possibly want than that? That sounds great.
As you know, Dan, very important. I mean, in a game of cricket, we spend so much time together, don't we? It's not like Absolutely. A game of football where it's 90 minutes and maybe 15 minutes either side of that. It's all goddamn day. So,
very true. And also, I mean, there's been a level of consistency across the team. I mean, if I've got this right, Andy Donnellan opens the bat in every week, and he's opened it with Jonty Hunt. So that's quite a lot of experience. Donnellan's been around for about 150 years, whereas Jonty's a much younger guy, isn't he? And am I right in saying 350 partnerships on the bounce in the last 3 weeks?
That's correct. Yeah. They've opened the batting for every game apart from the one game where Jonty wasn't available. And they've never failed for me. I've not been in a game where both of them have failed. The last two games, they put on a 50 partnership. Either of them have scored well every game. Some games, both of them. My top four are the same four every week, looking solid, looking good. A lot of potential runs in those top four, five. And then the explosive middle order of Waris Khan and Johnny Biff Bozier are there, and Zaffa as well, are there to score me quick runs off the back of a solid foundation up top.
Well, that's great. I mean, I have to say that if you offered Carlos Nunes in the first team 350 partnerships in 3 weeks for his opening pair, he'd snap my hand off. You know, that any captain worth his salt will take that level of consistency to get you going. Now, where to next for the Fives? We're moving into time cricket, so that's going to be a different set of challenges. Are you going to approach it the same way? Who are you playing this week, out of interest, Chris? I should know this, but I can't remember.
I'm playing Chiswick Fours this week, and you're absolutely right. Of course, it's the first time games, no longer limited overs. I relish timed games. I cut my teeth. I grew up on timed games. So if anything, I'm more comfortable skippering a timed game than a limited overs. I know the need to shut up shop when necessary. I also know the absolute need to be able to take 10 wickets. And
yeah, be positive. You've got to get them out, haven't you?
Everything you can to do that. Every trick in the book. Odd fields, changing up the bowling, even a little bit of sledging when necessary.
Sledging? This can't possibly be condoned, unless, of course, it's good.
Well, I do try for the more intellectual side of sledging, although often sometimes I think it escapes the batsman. I believe one week after a big swish and a miss, I said something along the lines of, now there's an example of the perfect Hegelian dialectic. Thesis, antithesis, no synthesis, but no, I think...
What, you're telling me the batsman didn't get it? My God. You know, the uneducated hoi polloi that play cricket, eh? I also heard a rumour...
What on earth are you guys talking?
We better move on. When two academics get onto Hegel, it's never pretty. So we'll leave that there. One thing I did hear, Chris, a little bird told me that you were giving all of your players... how does one put this? So nicknames to make them feel as if they were $1 million this week. Can you talk us through some of the examples? What was all this about?
Well, as part of the development of the esprit de corps I was talking about, and also to try and, after four loses on the bounce, you know, you want to try and do everything, literally everything. So I thought it would be appropriate to give all of my guys monikers based on Roman emperors.
Right. Talk us through a couple of these then.
Relatively easy to begin with. Naturally, I'm Julius Caesar.
Obviously.
I thought the oldest, most experienced member of the side, and Gilly Sanchez, should be Augustus.
Okay.
Then, of course, the slightly more mercurial character of Donners absolutely gets Caligula, without a doubt.
Yeah, okay, I can follow this one. You okay with that?
Absolutely no idea.
Can I ask you about one I like best? Oh, go on, what was Biff?
Biff was slightly controversially went for Brutus. Controversial not only because technically was not a Roman emperor, of course, but also stabbed Julius Caesar in the back. So I immediately dropped him to 11 in the batting, didn't bowl him, and relieved him of his wicket-keeping duties.
Going to say, you can't have rebellion on the cards. That's just not allowed. You know? We're on to Machiavelli here. I've got to stop this. Sorry, stop it. I've got to... The last one I was going to ask you was, I quite like Paul McLaughlin's, actually, and yours were like this, I'm sure. What was Paul McLaughlin?
So Paul McLaughlin, it was, of course, Hadrian, the great wall builder, because he is the wall coming in the lower order, in the tail, especially he's going to come into his own now we're in time games. I once witnessed the guy block out 22 overs in a game to get us the draw. Unbelievable stuff.
Yeah, I remember that. That's impressive. The challenge has been set. I don't know what on earth you can do in the twos to match that, but I'll leave that with you to ponder over.
She'll come up with something for next week.
Good man.
Leave it with me.
Moving on to the twos. I was going to sort of take the twos and the threes together this week because it was a bit of a wet weekend. We said we've been lucky with the weather, and we have, but there was a bit of rain about. So, of course, the toss becomes more important. And both Eugene and Steve Watts in the threes won the toss. So you both sort of have this dilemma. What do I do? And talk us through what happened in the twos game, Eugene, because you won the toss and you had a bat, right?
Yeah, I made the wrong decision.
Well, I think very simply. I think Watsy felt he did the same as well in the great scheme of things. But it's easy to be wise after the event. What was you thinking at the time?
Yeah, so the pitch was dry. I mean, obviously the new covers had just come on. What we didn't quite understand at the time is that there was a bunch of water that was already on the wicket. So, you know, unfortunately, the wicket did all sorts for the first sort of 25, 30 overs. And, you know, as it was sunny on the day, the wicket got nice and hard and became much easier to bat on I think it was the eighth wicket, the seventh wicket partnership of 100 plus showed us. So, you know, unfortunately, 150 after our 45 overs with the guys absolutely, you know, batting out the first, I would say, 35 overs to big score some half decent runs in the last 10. You know, they definitely showed us how it could be done. And then, you know, I think we did really well to take seven wickets on as the wicket got flatter and flatter. So one of those tosses that you just think to yourself, if I had to do over again, I definitely would have chosen to bowl first. But, you know, hindsight's a lovely thing. And
any captain who's captain a cricket side will feel your pain. We've all been there in some way, shape, or form. I have to say, I turned up just as Sam Clift was going out to bat, and Sam Clift batted. He put on 100, as you say, with Ethan Wright. And batting didn't look that hard then. But as you say, you know, when cricket wickets dry, they change, and they can change quite quickly. And to be fair to Cliffy, I know all of his workmates with his average, and Watsy's now put in place a fine system, and every mentions his cricket average, he has to do press-ups because Watsy's his boss. He did bat well, I have to say. And Ethan, I thought, batted well as well. And you were in the game for a long time, weren't you?
Yeah, we were. It's one of those nail-biters. We thought 150 would be enough when we got there in the end, actually. But then, you know, hindsight, the wicket got flatter and flatter, and wickets became quite hard to take. So, yeah, I mean, we bowled well, we caught well.
You caught well. Can you talk me through one catch in particular that I saw on pitch vision, which was reasonable?
Yeah, it was probably one of the best caught and bowls I've seen from anyone, no matter who young or how old they were. He took a dolly, first of all.
Dan Taylor we're talking about here, yeah.
Dan Taylor took a dolly. Nice, easy caught and bowled. Passed it back to the umpire. New batsman comes in. Bowls a relatively, I suppose you could call it sort of a half volley. guy absolutely smashes it. It's going for four. Effectively, Dan dives to his right, sticks out his right paw, and the ball just happens to stick straight in it. And I think he just lay on the ground for about 10 seconds afterwards before he realized that he caught the ball. Knuckle decided to go and chase the dog that we saw in week two.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, because Knuckle was at short mid-off, and he goes across the wicket at the speed of light, didn't he?
He was off. He was gone. I think he was surprised as everyone. So, yeah, it was a really good moment. And again, you know, really good to catch those sort of moments on camera, which is nice.
No, I thought it was a phenomenal catch. I mean, Dan Taylor's taken great catches before. He has bucket-like hands. So I'm not at all surprised that he catches things. But the way he got there, for someone, again, who's, you know, about 90 years old, it was a wonderful, wonderful bit of agility. And fair play to DT. It was a top catch. And you lost by three wickets in the end, didn't you? Just they had a guy who batted really well at the end, I thought. He got 30 not out in 90 balls, took his time, and he was the difference in the end.
Yeah, it was one of those innings where it was block, block, bash. And the bashes, unfortunately, were falling in spots.
Yeah.
You know, it was one of those things where you put a fielder somewhere and he hits it where it wasn't in the air. And you're going, oh, my gosh, it's going to be one of these days. So,
that's 4 weeks of my story there, Huge.
Don't worry, Chris, it gets better. It gets crueler. The one thing I just want to say I know DT listens to these podcasts. That was his 100th game for the twos, league game.
Was it?
For the twos.
Wow.
So, we celebrated in style in the clubhouse afterwards with him. Some would call it mourning the loss, but I'd like to think we were celebrating Dan's 100th game.
That's a great achievement. That's good. It's good. Good stuff. Less sort of positive from the Wands. What Wands were pretty well beaten at Hampstead. I know a few of our guys went around to watch, and I watched a little bit of it on Pitch Vision. I think we were chasing 260 and had a bit of a bad start. And of course, when you're chasing a decent-ish total, you need a decent start. And we never really, really got going. I know Misa Mussain got a few runs. Gurj Sandhu. Also batted pretty well at the end, but we seem to have this thing about starting slowly in the time cricket, so in the overs cricket. So fingers crossed that as we moved into the time cricket and games against the sides that are around us in the table, that the Wands can come to the party. And I'm sure they will. They're a good side. They just haven't really produced as of yet. But long season, plenty of time for them to do that. Threes, well, Watsy's story is similar to yours, but the other way around, isn't it? Huge in that he won the toss, and he decided, as I guess most of us would have decided, that it might be better to bat second as a pitch dries, but it clearly wasn't. And the poor old threes weren't chasing a million. I think they were chasing, was it 160, 170?
Yeah.
And struggled along and didn't really get anywhere near it. So they're in the middle of the league. They're still very much looking up rather than down, but I know it wasn't the greatest day at the office for those guys. So commiserations, and they move on. They move on to next week. The fours, meanwhile,
they go marching on.
My goodness me! Played 5, won 5. Yeah, Chris, any thoughts on the fours? You've been speaking to the guys. What are they having to say about it?
It must be all my best players that keep going up to the fours that's doing it for them.
Well, they've certainly been consistent, haven't they?
They've been an amazing team this season. Great job. Fair play to them, top of the table. They deserve to be there. They've been playing solidly and just accumulating those wins nice and quietly in the background.
Well, I think that's a key point, really. The fours have won all these games, but they haven't battered that many teams. I mean, an Indian Gym at the weekend, they won by 4 wickets. And they have definitely got into that winning habit, that they know how to get over the line. You know, people like Neil Tomar, as I think I said in one of the things on the website, that bloke wakes up and smells red inkers. You know, he's the type of guy who loves being there at the end to hit the winning runs. And that's good. That, you know, when people get in that position, you tend to win more than you lose. I noticed they had Mehran Iqbal back this week. He's a useful player in 14 cricket. If they can keep him playing, then I think they'll have a very profitable season. They do, of course, play Richmond this week, who are third. So I'll be interested to see how they move on there into the time games against what I'm guessing will be another pretty good team. Sunday 11 also played. Just for those guys who follow these things, Sunday 11 had a very close match over at Byfleet. Plenty of rain in the air. Three Johnsons on show, Sam, Paul and Mark, contributed a mighty 12 between them, of which Sam got 9. But they did pretty well. And there was a couple of new guys there who, I guess, Chris, may well find their way into into your or Hine's side this weekend. So it was a good day for them. They won by 10 runs, some good cricket. And, you know, I think Sunday cricket is much underrated. You play at some nice grounds, you play with different players. And if anyone's listening and fancies a game there, then you're more than welcome. This coming weekend then, guys.
If I was a single man, Dan, I'd be playing Saturdays and Sundays.
Don't even go there, Chris. I'd be playing Saturdays, Sundays and every other day. looking forward, this weekend then, talk me through where you are. You are at home.
We're at home against Stanmore.
Right. Yeah.
They are top of the log. They've played 5-1-5.
Oh, right.
So top of the log. Nice big clash this weekend, which should be a bit of fun. One's got Finchley.
Yeah, big game.
They're away. Yeah. Again, when you look at the form of the five games that you know all the teams have won, I think Finchley have won one and we've won one, so should be a good matchup.
I don't think Finchley have won a game.
Haven't they?
No, okay, I think they've got a few bonus points along the way, but I don't think they have. Yeah, but come what may, you know, sides around us, this is staying up material. You know, you try and win these games, don't you, to get yourself a little bit ahead of the rivals.
Yeah,
all I can say is beware of teams that have yet to win a game. They may have a big win in the locker.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I think I've long since thought that, you know, don't really look at who you're playing. Just go and play.
Yeah, exactly. And then the threes this weekend have got Bronsbury. So, yeah, again, if you look at, you know, what's he's gone, loss, win, loss, win, loss. Well, he's due for a win when you look at his form.
And Bronsbury are near the top of the league. They are one of the better sides. So that'll be an interesting encounter.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And then, as you said, Dan, Richmond, you know, the fours have got Richmond.
Yeah.
Chris, who are you playing against?
Got Chiswick away, first of the time games. Oh, yeah. So.
And where is Chiswick in the league, Chris? I was going to ask you that before, but are they a good side or?
I probably should know this as skipper, but I don't. I do know that they've been bowling sides out cheaply. So we are predominantly a batting team, and I think we're going to come up against the best bowling team in the league, from what I can tell. So we need to bat as well as we've been batting all season, and given the recent strength of our bowling, hopefully clean them up.
I know you're looking to have in the side. I mean, yeah, Phil Walker's due some runs. He scored a lot of runs last year, but hasn't really hit
home. He was the run machine last year. Yeah, Phil Walker, a.k.a. Marcus Aurelius, is definitely due some runs.
You're going to lose Hughes again here.
Yeah. I've lost Tiberius Caesar, unfortunately, a.k.a. Johnson.
Yeah. Oh, he's not playing, Johnson. Okay.
No, he's not available this week, unfortunately. So I've lost half of my opening pair. May have to stick myself into open. May have the man who coaches the coaches who coaches the coaches to take his place.
Anea.
I'm thinking of christening him Nero.
Okay.
Somewhat of a prickly character in the field, likes to get under the skin of the batsman when he's in the field, and is a bit of a can nudge it and nerdle it around in some unorthodox shots.
Well, and he's a good guy to have around. And I saw him bat on Sunday in the friendly, and he crashed or put a pull to the boundary. Didn't quite get to the boundary. It was a wet day, but he looked like he was in the mood and then got out. He's definitely one of those players, I think, who is due. Big style, and I think it could be.
I agree with you. So I'm thinking I'm going to open him and hope he can do right by me. And lay on some runs, put them under some real pressure. They haven't scored many runs this season. They've been winning games, but only by getting sides out cheaply. So
interesting. One thing I would say, guys, not sure if this is probably the place we should finish, but having a look at the other scorecards around Middlesex, it's always worse somewhere else. Never forget that. And poor old Wickham House. Wickham House Wands, they're struggling at the bottom of Division 2, and they've only scored 100 once this year. And on Saturday, they were 37 all out, which is never a great way to do things. But when you're 3 for 6, I'm guessing 37 actually looks quite a long way away. So they recovered from 3 for 6. Their skipper, Dilesh Pereira, was 29.
Wow.
So, you know, I don't think I've ever played in a Saturday side that's been 37 all out, but...
Well, our first game of the season, we were 42 all out.
Oh, yeah.
I top scored with 10.
Can I think it's a good thing, Chris?
No.
But it's still more of a team effort, if you want to put it that way, than what Wickham House managed at the weekend.
Exactly,
So there we go. Fellas, it's been a real pleasure. Really good to get some insight into the fifths, Chris. Very best of luck for Saturday and the rest of the season.
Thank you.
You, fingers crossed, you lose the toss at the weekend. I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, let them make the decision. That'll be ideal.
And keep at it, go. I saw a lot of that game, and you know, I thought you played some good cricket, to be fair. So, let's see how we go. And, of course, we'll be reconvening next week to chew the fat. So, thanks, guys.
Thanks guys.
Thanks. Bye. Bye.